I'm Ray Bassett, and today on Scenic Roots, Fine Arts and Crafts in Dalton.
What we look at is art on the gallery and the wall, back to ourselves as cultural people. We all have innate arts and culture that are a part of who we are. So it celebrates all of that together.
Fall plants at Crabtree Farms.
We're getting more and more involved in the community. We see more and more people at our door and on our farm, playing and enjoying life and really finding the respite from city life that is, again, only 5 to 10 minutes from downtown.
And Matilda takes the stage.
Caught by the man locked in the cage will be performed and performed this day, or off to prison they both shall go.
No, no!
These voices and more today on Scenic Roots. The news is next. This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. In Dalton, Georgia, this year's Festival of Fine Arts and Crafts begins tonight with a Taste of Dalton. It starts at 7 p.m. at the Creative Arts Guild, where the festival runs on Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. and on Sunday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Amanda Brown and Leanne Martin are with the Creative Arts Guild.
Amanda and Leanne, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having
Thank
us.
Thank you.
This event in Dalton has been around for a long time.
Yes, this is our 56th annual Festival of Fine Arts and Crafts.
How did it come about?
Well, the Guild was founded in 1963 by a group of community volunteers and people who were interested in the arts. And in that very first year, the idea of bringing everyone together for one big celebratory event that celebrated all of the arts in one big packed weekend, bringing in artists from all over the country to Dalton, was really tied closely to the mission of the Guild's existence. So this festival happened the first year the Guild was established and has every year since.
As much as Dalton has changed over the years and over the decades, this festival has been a constant for the community.
Absolutely. I can speak from experience. I have many of my childhood memories at the Creative Arts Guild's festival. I grew up there and left home and did my thing, and I'm now back involved at the Guild again. And I think for a lot of families, it is that. It's a great tradition. It's a community event. It depends heavily on community volunteerism to this day, even though now we have a pretty robust staff for an arts nonprofit. We do have departmental directors in several different directions. But this, we still have a community chair and co-chair. Our community restaurants come out. Our community groups come and do the volunteerism and support the artists coming in and hosting the artists. And all of that happens because the community comes together. We see people festival time that we don't see the rest of the year. All of a sudden they show up and they're starting to put up tents and they're here again. And so,
Leanne, tell me more about your connection to all this.
I've been at the Guild for quite a while and have been through about 30 festivals now. So I work with a lot of our volunteers and put together coordinate with our departments, and so it really is a full festival that represents all of our disciplines. And so it's kind of our celebration of all the arts. It's not just visual artists, which are a big part of festival, because we have an indoor gallery exhibits, and we also have an artist market outside under our building, so it's on a nice sheltered patio. We open with our Friday night Taste of Dalton so that everybody has their first experience with the artists, and the artist market is open, the indoor gallery, and it's a big way that we kick off. We have more than 20 restaurants that will be joining us for Friday night for Taste of Dalton, and so there'll be special nibbles along with the art. That is a ticketed event Friday night. On Saturday, we open up for the rest of the weekend, and that's all free.
But you have to start off with food.
We have to start off with food. And so, of course, we have food all weekend, not just Friday night. So you come, you eat, you shop, you eat some more. You take the children to play in our multicultural children's area. We have, this year we'll have 7 countries that children will be able to explore arts and crafts and get a feel of what's going on, along with multicultural performances in Children's Hill. So we have, let's see if we can do the countries.
Egypt, Great Britain, India, China, Brazil, Mexico, and Germany. And the kids all get a passport at the beginning of their venture, and they're encouraged to go to each country, travel around the world, learning about arts and culture.
This is quite a showcase for the artists in the Dalton area. And talking about the multicultural side of it, it's a reflection of how Dalton has changed over the years and the community that it is now and that it is poised to become in the coming years.
Absolutely. Festival definitely celebrates the diversity of the artists of all different medias of art, but then also of all the people, like you said, that are in Dalton that support the arts. And what we look at is, you know, the art on the gallery and the wall, back to ourselves as cultural people. We all have innate arts and culture that are a part of who we are. So it celebrates all of that together and kind of teaches children and older family members how that bridge comes together and how art is essentially a part of who we are.
And that art is not only created, but it has to be experienced.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in addition to, as Leanne said, the visual art, we have performances that happen all weekend. We have dance performances. We have music, live music all day, every day. And there's a potpourri of things to see as you experience around. And, you know, it's family friendly. People of all ages, there's something to experience. We even have an opportunity for dogs to participate in the weekend and come and represent their background and culture. So it's a very inclusive event.
What would you say is Dalton's contribution to art in the national sense?
Interesting question. So Creative Arts Guild specifically, I mean, our goal is kind of the arts leader in Dalton and a hub of arts and culture for our community. We hope to be the resource that everyone comes to if they want to produce something that has to do with the arts, or if they just are interested in having live music or art involved in one of their events, just interested in bringing something new to Dalton. You know, we hope to be the resource for everyone to come to the Guild and ask how we can coordinate that to happen. And then, you know, I think the Guild's presence in Dalton and being Dalton's arts leader, Dalton's arts presence for the greater world, is about bringing experiences comparable to that you would see in a larger city to a smaller community environment, so that, you know, we have an annual ballet that we do every year with a live orchestra. We have this great arts festival that brings in regional art from all over, really all over the country. That's great regional, but there's also other people from great further away places. But to allow for experiences for our community members and for people who are traveling, that they don't have to travel far to get. I mean, just make it accessible. Make arts accessible for everyone is really kind of the mission of the Guild, of the festival, and I think of Dalton's art community.
Making art accessible includes making that information accessible online. So where can people go online for more information about the festival?
Our website is creativeartsguild.org. And you can find us on Facebook at Creative Arts Guild and get all the information you need.
All right. Amanda, Leanne, thank you so much and all the best.
Thank you very much.
The conversations you hear on Scenic Roots are just one example of the power of local on WUTC. The power of local is the power of you. You are the reason WUTC is exceptional, and we thank you. Thanks to your support, you hear the power of local information on WUTC. Scenic Roots feature podcasts with Will Davis, who brings you Tennessee Valley StoryCorps, and our news with Bill McLean. Thanks to your support, you hear the power of locally generated music on WUTC. Cajun, classic R&B, jazz, bluegrass, modern alternative, noon tunes from Miller Park, live in the library, and the return of Richard Winham to the daytime. When you make a pledge by calling 423-425-4756 or online at WUTC.org, you show how the power of local is the power of you. Your contribution helps provide local information and local music that only public radio can do for Chattanooga and the Tennessee Valley. And your contribution helps provide the news and programs you enjoy and rely on about this country and our world. Morning Edition, All Things Considered, Fresh Air, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and so much more. We thank you, because the power of local is the power of you, here on WUTC. Call now at 423-425-4756 or give online at WUTC.org. Tomorrow, Crabtree Farms here in Chattanooga holds its fall plant sale and festival from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Sarah McIntyre is Executive Director of Crabtree Farms.
Sarah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Ray.
So tell us more about this event.
Absolutely. This is the 17th annual Crabtree Farms Fall Plant Sale and Festival. It's a lot of fun. It's one of our biannual plant sales. It's where we bring the community together to celebrate gardening, to celebrate fall, and just to have a good time.
And for people such as myself who are recent arrivals here in Chattanooga, tell us more about Crabtree Farms mm-hmm. and its mission.
Crabtree Farms is a nonprofit teaching and learning farm. We've been in Chattanooga for over 20 years. We're tucked into a little neighborhood in Clifton Hills, so we're only about 5 to 10 minutes from downtown Chattanooga. And we grow organic vegetables, well, sustainably grown vegetables and fruit and herbs and plant starts for the community. You can find us at farmers markets. You can find us on the menus at several restaurants. We entertain children and have a lot of great field trips and educational resources for both kids and big people, adults.
Us.
Yes, indeed, us of all ages. And so the plant sale is really just one of the few times that the public, while the public is always allowed to come and visit Crabtree, as long as our gates are open, I like to say that people are welcome to come and walk around and enjoy the farm and kind of treat us like a zoo, where they can come and watch us like zoo animals. You know, ooh, look at the farmer. What is it doing? I don't know. But these are big fun festival days where we shine up our shoes and we invite everybody out to kind of have an old-fashioned hoedown almost.
And speaking of hoedown, that includes music.
It does. There will be food. There will be beverage. There will be music. It's a free event, free admission, as well as free parking. Obviously, if you wish to acquire some new plants for your garden or some soaps or some handmade candles, anything like that, that our vendors or us are selling, you know, we're going to ask you to pay for that.
And how long have you been with Crabtree Farms?
I've been with Crabtree Farms for 10 seasons now.
How have things changed for Crabtree Farms during that time?
Crabtree Farms is a really interesting place because it started as a cut flower farm and has grown over time and shifted. We shift with the needs of our community. We shift with the needs and the rise of the local food program and the trendiness of local foods. And so what I've really seen over the last 10 years is I've seen an increase in our education. I've seen us welcome more and more people onto the farm, little people as well as big people, to come and play and get dirty and learn a variety of things. We like to take what we call traditional concepts and give them a new twist and bring them back to people. So we'll do soap making, we do fall farm to cocktails classes. So we really try to think about what are some fun ways that people can engage with the earth or with products of the earth who maybe aren't gardeners necessarily, or maybe they are gardeners, they just didn't know it. And so you can really come out, you can volunteer, you can learn a lot from us, but you can also just come and play with us. And I like that about Crabtree. I like that we're getting more and more involved in the community. We see more and more people at our door and on our farm playing and enjoying life and really finding the respite from city life that is, again, only 5 to 10 minutes from downtown. It's a gem. You drive onto the property and all of a sudden you don't hear the street sounds. The bird song comes out. You hear the crickets. You notice the clouds in the sky. And everybody just slows down and takes a deep breath.
It's another dimension of how this city, this area, embraces the outdoors.
Absolutely. It absolutely is. We have a rental facility on site, and we see a bunch of people who they may just want to come for a business meeting and are tired of meeting in hotels or conference rooms, or they may be looking for a more DIY wedding event or a rehearsal dinner or just a fun community event. And they find us, and it's easy. It's easy to travel to us. It's obviously parking is free, which is a big thing in Chattanooga right now, right? But it's a way to be outside while also being in a built space. So though we have 22 acres, only 11 of them is fenced. We grow 4 acres of food, but you really get this pastoral sense when you're there, and you can indeed, like you said, engage with the out-of-doors in a slightly different way.
So you've worked there for the past 10 seasons. Mm-hmm. What brought you here?
Love.
Ah.
It didn't work out, but I stayed.
I am a transplant, mm-hmm. recent arrival. Where are you from?
Originally, I'm from Kansas, okay. though I transplanted here from Los Angeles.
So you've seen a lot of changes, not just for Crabtree Farms, but also for Chattanooga during during that time.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe that?
I think that over the last 10 years, I've seen a lot more of us transplants, and I like the colors and the flavors and the vivacity that we bring to the city. I really feel like largely Chattanooga welcomes us and is excited for what we bring and the additions that we make to the city. And it feels like it's more and more a welcoming space. Originally, I only knew transplanters. Now I know native Chattanoogans as well as the transplant community. And I just find Chattanooga becoming more vibrant as a city. I like our diversity and I like the energy that the city, I really feel, is kind of taking on and owning its identity. At the beginning, it felt like it was still kind of figuring out who it wanted to be as a city. And I think that now we're really starting to embrace, okay, we have these pillars of who we are, food and the out-of-doors and the arts and innovation. And like, let's get gritty with them and let's find all the ways that they intersect and let's celebrate that.
And as Chattanooga has embraced food as one of those pillars, that's happened at the same time as nationally people are more concerned about what they eat, where it comes from, and experiences such as farm to table.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful space to kind of enter into agriculture. I wasn't in agriculture when I arrived in Chattanooga. And so when I arrived in Chattanooga, it was really the beginning of the local food movement in Chattanooga. I was really, you know, Taste Buds was one of the programs that Crabtree ran. It started in 2008. The Main Street Farmers Market, which is now a very vibrant and growing and well-attended farmers market, had just begun a few years before. And I feel like when I arrived, we were really still curating and cultivating the local food movement. And now when I look around, it's proliferated. It's an explosion of food happiness. And people don't feel the need anymore to necessarily have a governing body of local food, to have a leader or a leadership council to really think about, well, how are we doing food in the city? I feel like so many people have ideas and we're drawing inspirations from many different areas, and that this community is collaborative, it's celebratory, it's friendly, and it's large in a way that is exciting. It's thrilling to not have experienced all there is to experience in Chattanooga.
And we'll see that represented at the festival.
You will indeed.
So where can people go online for more information?
Crabtreefarms.org.
All right. Sarah, thanks so much and all the best.
Thank you, Ray.
The conversations you hear on Scenic Routes are just one example of the power of local on WUTC. The power of local is the power of you. You are the reason WUTC is exceptional, and we thank you. Thanks to your support, you hear the power of local information on WUTC. Scenic Routes feature podcasts with Will Davis, who brings you Tennessee Valley StoryCorps, and our news with Bill McLean. Thanks to your support, you hear the power of locally generated music on WUTC. Cajun, classic R&B, jazz, bluegrass, modern alternative, noon tunes from Miller Park, live in the library, and the return of Richard Winham to the daytime. When you make a pledge by calling 423-425-4756 or online at WUTC.org, you show how the power of local is the power of you. Your contribution helps provide local information and local music that only public radio can do for Chattanooga and the Tennessee Valley. And your contribution helps provide the news and programs you enjoy and rely on about this country and our world. Morning Edition, All Things Considered, Fresh Air, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and so much more. We thank you, because the power of local is the power of you, here on WUTC. Call now at 423-425-4756 or give online at WUTC.org. You're listening to Scenic Routes. More after our news with Bill McLean. This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Tonight, Chattanooga Theater Center opens its new season with the musical Matilda. The director and choreographer is Catherine Michelle Tanner. You may have heard our conversation with Catherine last month. Ahead of tonight's show, Catherine came back to our studio and sat down with her own Richard Wenham.
I kind of hesitate to say this, but at the same time, having read the synopsis of the musical, I think it's accurate. Well, not necessarily accurate, but it's an accurate impression that Roald Dahl was a little mean to his children in his books.
He definitely has a lovely dark side that he doesn't shy away from, and he doesn't hide the quirks. He seems to have like a burp in all of his, kind of funny in a way, but he always has characters that burp. But he really, which is so funny and very childlike, it's very quirky. And I like those idiosyncrasies. He really doesn't shy away from that. And he also makes sure that you meet him at his level while he meets you at your level. So this is one of those stories you can enjoy it with the entire family, because young ones get the comedy, the middle ones get like a little angst, and then adults get great heart and great comedy. It's really, really a fun piece.
It sounds almost like the antidote to Walt Disney.
Absolutely. And I think we need that. Just when we get something on our plate that's super sugary, we need something a little sour and a little sweet so we can enjoy the other one. Otherwise, it's a feast of the same thing, and who needs that?
And some would argue, you know, that there's more truth in the way Roald Dahl presents children and children's lives.
I think so. And sometimes when I look back at his writings, I wonder what time he is writing in. And this one is so vibrant, but it can fall under any time. It could be happening a long time ago. It could be happening tomorrow. It could be happening, you know, it's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, I resonated with the synopsis immediately.
Good.
Little Matilda, her parents are kind of mean to her. The people that that run the school are classic Dickensian characters.
Absolutely.
Children are maggots?
I know. What kind of a you know, scenario is that? But I think, too, this piece is very much, when you look at the heart of the piece, I always try to write one sentence. And before I pick a project, I have to decide, is this something I want to give my time to? And when I think of this piece, I immediately think of all of them are following their instincts. They might not be good. The kind of verbal banter that she gets from her parents is not lovely, but it's also a reminder that she doesn't have to become a product of what she came from. She can rise above that with help of others, and we can only rise above that with help of others. And if I really look at people who follow their instincts and get out of a bad situation, that's a story that I want to get behind. And that's a story I want to spend my time working on, and really wrapping up this beautiful bow with that message inside is completely worth it to me. So,
you have a long history in the theater.
I do. I'm very, very fortunate to have spent my entire career. I'm originally from Hastings, Minnesota, which is all very, very small river town in it's Lock and Dam number 2 on the Mississippi, right south of Minneapolis, St. Paul. And I grew up with theater people in my family. The Rifleman, Chuck Connors, is my cousin.
Really?
He is on one side of my family. And on the other side, I have an Oscar winner who won an Oscar for the 1930s film, The Champ. So Wallace Beery. And I didn't know that until my 30s. I was like, oh, great. So they let me kind of follow my own instincts, which was really, really nice. But it was lovely to kind of fall out of trees and corn to tassel and do my own theater. And then finally, I really followed my passion. And I actually lived in London briefly and studied with the RSC and was on stage with them a few times. And that's where...
What did you take away from that experience?
Honestly, that you have to keep working at your craft. It reminds me of being a great surgeon without a great surgery. You have to be ready, and you have to invest in yourself as an artistic athlete. And I think that if you don't do that and try new challenges, if the surgeon doesn't go try this new remote surgery, they're never going to know. But artists, sometimes I do feel like we're walking around looking for the next surgery. We're this great surgeon and we have all this capacity. So instead of waiting, I started creating it, which I think is a lovely next step. It's a little terrifying, but it's exactly what I wanted to do. And who are you if you're not challenging yourself in a lovely way? Not, you know, it's not like I'm... going on some kind of a marathon or something. That'd be a challenge I don't need. But I think that, so this long history in the theater, I studied it. I had a triple major in undergrad and then went on to get my master's in acting. And now I direct and write, and I'm doing a lot of great new projects. In fact, I leave this project the day after it opens, and I'm up in New York doing a one-woman show. So it'll be nice to be back in New York.
I like the idea of an artistic athlete.
It is. You have to treat yourself that way. And I try to train my actors to treat themselves that way. Don't, you know, watch your nutrition, watch your sleeping patterns, watch how you tap into your emotions. Be careful, because you are given gifts, and it's exciting to use them in the best possible way.
It's always seemed to me that the RSC and their whole philosophy is grounded in the idea of an artistic athlete, that this is a business.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a craft.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that you have to, as you've said, to just keep working at it. There's nothing precious about their
right
way of presenting it to you or presenting that world to you.
Right.
This is a competitive, demanding world.
Very. And in fact, I was staying at a bed and breakfast in Stratford-upon-Avon, and Alex Jennings was doing, I know, who starts the sentence like that? But it's true. And Alex Jennings was just in Much Ado About Nothing at the Stratford Theater there. And what was so fascinating is he came biking up to our bed and breakfast, because I was a student. This was back in the 90s. And I remember going, oh, this shouldn't have been the day I wore my glasses. I should have worn my contacts. So we're sitting there at breakfast, a very proper English breakfast. And here he comes walking in. And a lot of the people who I was studying with were there for an English degree. And I was there definitely as an actor. And I stood out like a sore thumb in a good way, because I would ask different types of questions than they did, studying Shakespeare and all that. That's great. And his writings. But let's go into the heart of it. What is it like to eat them and chew them and spit them out every night, you know, that type of thing. And Alex said, I said, Alex, what is one thing that you're working on right now that we might not know about as an actor, not a project, but what are you working on? And he said, oh, well, I'm not a great singer, and so I'm taking voice lessons. And I was like, great. I want to know these things. I want to know. And then a few weeks later, he was cast in Wings of the Dove and just, you know, went on to, and now he's in The Crown. And I mean, he's in so many things. But it's those types of things where you can work on your strengths and you can work on your weaknesses. And I think people shouldn't be afraid of that. I like that you said they're not precious about, you know, we're gonna show you our work in progress, and hopefully you buy a ticket, you know.
Well, he wasn't exactly directly involved with the RSC, but that line from Laurence Olivier always runs through my mind when I talk to actors.
Mm-hmm.
When he was talking to an actor who was very much a fan of the method.
Mm, yes, I've studied this.
And Laurence Olivier basically said, it's acting, dear
it
boy.
Is.
It's acting.
It's great. I think it's healthy to understand where your emotions lie, but it's also healthy to realize that you're just...
You're playing a part.
You're playing a part, and it's okay to go home and make cookies. And you're going to be fine both ways. But I think it's more fun to remember... to leave any job. You can leave any job. You can study it and get as much into it as you'd like, but also let it go at the end of the day and go home to your family or go home to your dog or your cat and enjoy the rest of your life, because the art of living is equally as beautiful as art. And if you do it right, you can find some kind of a balance sometimes, right? Not all the time.
Well, that's a great attitude to have as the director of a cast who are not professional actors.
Right.
They're spending a lot of their time doing something else.
Right. And, you know, it's funny. Last year when I directed Newsies, I start with a physical warm-up. I go in and we start with about a 15-minute physical warm-up, 10, 15 minutes. And it's a meditation to allow them to let go of that day and know that we're going to start here and we're using all of ourselves. And then we do a vocal warm-up and I lead them through that on the piano as well. And then we head right into the piece. And I think it's like a ballet bar. It's a meditation to kind of stop that and start this. And I've followed that all the way through. And the casts over the years that I've worked with all across the U.S., they continue to keep it as I leave. And I don't say you have to do this, but I'm like, you do have to warm up. And it's nice to see them send me videos. I'm like, oh, good. I'm glad to see you're still, you know, allowing yourself to switch hats and switch gears.
when you approach a play or a musical mm-hmm. like Matilda, it seems as if you have to create a whole world.
We do. This is a very eccentric world. It's like a circus of emotions, literally. One second she's being yelled at, and the next second she's performing a magic trick as revenge, you know? And I think that I'm keeping it very playful and very, very filled with joy, because I think this piece could get very dark very quickly. And if I were a child, I'm not so sure I'd want to walk into that haunted house. It's not a haunted story at all. It's a very joy-filled story. But we're maintaining that joy all the way throughout to make sure that it's a pleasant experience for all. And also, I really want the students, as they go through this, because they're young, you know, 9, 10, 11, sometimes 8 in our cast, I want them to remember that there is no right or wrong in this theater. There's just better or worse. So they can make what they might consider as a bad choice, and I'll go, oh, that was less good. Let's move on to something else. And as actors, you never want to feel like there is that right or wrong. It's really, is this telling the story better, or is this, you know, not helping us tell that story?
So I'm getting that it's a bit like Lionel Bart when he took Oliver Twist and made Oliver.
A little bit, it is. I can only imagine what this writing room was like for these people, you know, to kind of sit down and throw all these pieces together. I can only imagine.
So you're taking something dark and trying to keep it light.
Yes, and we're not putting anything on it. We're just allowing its playfulness to shine. So we're not changing the story. We're not changing its values or anything. We're just allowing it to be playful. People can do funny, you know, comedy has a dark side. In one hot second, you could flip it on a dime and it could have that dark side.
That's those two masks, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. And I think this piece really covers all of it. I was trying to tell my friends, they were like, so how has it been working on the show? And I'm like, take every show you've ever done without tap dancing and put it in this show. And that's what we're doing. And there's puppets and there's, you know, it's just very, very playful and fun.
It seems that one of the coolest things about it, because it strikes me as being somewhat Monty Python-esque. It's told through the eyes of a child.
Yes, it is.
And so there's that whole, children have this wonderful way of both seeing the world exactly as it is.
Right.
Cutting through all of the artifice. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, being very much willing to embrace magical realism.
Thank goodness. I hope that we all suspend disbelief like they do. And I always tell people, put a show in front of children first and you'll know if it's working. Because they don't know social decorum. They don't, I mean, they know please and thank you. And they know, you know, you have to get dressed in the morning and things like that. But they don't understand the social status and atmospheres. Nor they learn it through growing up and through being a part of different social spheres and socioeconomic statuses. But I think that if a show can work with children and adults equally, then you're onto something. Then you're onto some magic. And I love that we can take a fork and make it a paintbrush, and that we can take a tooth and make it a gem. You know, these are the types of things that we should be doing. And if we can suspend that disbelief, then we get to do that for others. And boy, do we need it right now. I mean, we always need it, but I think especially right now, I think our audiences are going to be coming in looking for that. And it kind of falls at a great time, right around Halloween, right around where things get a little bit mystical and funky and great. We should enjoy that time and show them our version of our story.
And there's young Matilda, who is seriously transgressive.
Seriously, that's the perfect word. And I've cast two Matildas because it's a lot for a 10-year-old to take on. I also don't think that they've necessarily had the experience of training their bodies and training their minds. And it's okay to be tired, and you should be tired after a show like that. So every other night, they'll be able to switch off. And it's so great. They're completely different. They're bringing such different sensibilities to this. There's no way you could compare the two. They even look, you know, very, very different. It's fun for the cast to interact with them differently, but keep it very organic and keep it truthful to what it is in this moment. It really keeps them on their toes. It keeps me on my toes to have to coach. I have done this in the past. You have to double cast and you have to approach like it is a different show. You know, the sensibilities and their instincts are a little bit different.
It sounds like a very high energy show.
Are you kidding me? We need to be sponsored by Starbucks and other such things. But yes, it is a very high energy show. Very high energy. And we talk a lot about that. Protein snacks. I said no sugars allowed. We need to sustain and maintain. I think we are waiting for those final elements. The audience is really our last cast member, but we're now waiting to get, we have some of the set here. We rented the set, so some pieces have come in. We're waiting to get the costumes. We go into tech this next week, which is, knock on wood, exciting and a little bit nerve-wracking. But I keep a low-key tech. I make sure that all of our pieces have been put together. And our variables will change, but the things that we know can stay strong in that equation. Because I think it's hard for them to, you know, a little 10-year-old, and suddenly they've got, you know, 30 scenes, and we're flying in these bookshelves that are larger than my New York apartment, or, you know what I mean? It's very unique and exciting to them. And just stay moment to moment, that's all that they have to think about. And it's fun. It's so much fun. We've been enjoying this, and their energy levels have been building and progressing, and they're getting stronger, so.
Shall we close with a scene from the play? Would you care to set it up, Catherine?
Yes, this is one of the scenes where Matilda loves to tell stories, and Mrs. Phelps in the library really enjoys her stories. So she brings that out in Matilda, and she allows her to tell more of the story. So it's like a ongoing version. And she's like, oh, this is the next part of the story, and she can't wait to hear the next part. Almost like a soap opera, really, for Mrs. Phelps. And so this is Mrs. Phelps listening to the middle part of the story. And we had to pick a scene where we wouldn't give anything away. So we hope that you enjoy. Thank you for having us.
Oh, Matilda!
Absolute silence. You could have heard a fly burp. Then suddenly, the audience jumped to its feet and roared in appreciation. The great feat was instantly forgotten, and the applause went on for nearly an hour.
So it has a happy ending.
Forgotten by everyone except, that is, the acrobat sister. When all had quieted down, she stepped forward and produced a contract.
A contract?
A contract you have signed. Perform this feat, and perform this feat you shall.
No.
I have paid for the hostess, publicity, the catering, the toilet facilities. If I give the crowd their money back, where is my profit? A contract is a contract is a contract. My hands are tied. The burning woman, hurling through the air, with dynamite in her hair, over shocks and spiky objects caught by the man locked in the cage, will be performed, and performed this day, or off to prison they both shall go.
No, no! What happened next?
I don't know. Yet. I'll tell you tomorrow.
What? But I don't know if my nerves will make it until tomorrow.
Mrs. Phelps, are you crying? Maybe I shouldn't tell you anymore.
Oh, no, Matilda. We must find out how it ends. And I'm not crying because it's sad. It's just they want that child so very much. It must be wonderful for a child to be so wanted.
Yes, wonderful. Goodbye, Mrs. Phelps.
A scene from Matilda, which premieres tonight at Chattanooga Theater Center. Before that, we heard Catherine Michelle Tanner, the director and choreographer, with the one and only Richard Wenham. You're listening to Scenic Roots on WUTC. The conversations you hear on Scenic Roots are just one example of the power of local on WUTC. The power of local is the power of you. You are the reason WUTC is exceptional, and we thank you. Thanks to your support, you hear the power of local information on WUTC. Scenic Roots feature podcasts with Will Davis, who brings you Tennessee Valley StoryCorps, and our news with Bill McLean. Thanks to your support, you hear the power of locally generated music on WUTC. Cajun, classic R&B, jazz, bluegrass, modern alternative, noon tunes from Miller Park, live in the library, and the return of Richard Wenham to the daytime. When you make a pledge by calling 423-425-4756 or online at wutc.org, you show how the power of local is the power of you. Your contribution helps provide local information and local music that only public radio can do for Chattanooga and the Tennessee Valley.
And your contribution helps provide the news and programs you enjoy and rely on about this country and our world. Morning Edition, All Things Considered, Fresh Air, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and so much more. We thank you, because the power of local is the power of you, here on WUTC. Call now at 423-425-4756 or give online at wutc.org. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. Our show is produced by Haley Solomon, Carly Dodson, and Will Davis from the studios of WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Follow us on Twitter at @ScenicRoots423 and email us at ScenicRoots423@gmail.com. Also, follow WUTC on Facebook and Instagram, and listen online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. We're back Monday at 3 p.m., and we leave you with Ouida, playing tonight at Songbirds in Chattanooga. Have a good weekend, and join us again next time for Scenic Roots.
In my room, the story grows. Ain't got no time for those highs and lows. And I can't believe the world expecting from me something more than what I could be.
I can't believe you're all expecting. real feel, but you can't heal. It lets you grow. I know I get crazy in my head sometimes. I try to hide it, then you go find it. We're losing our mind. And I can't believe you don't expect it from me. Something more than what I can leave. 'Cause you would do anything. Talking about anything to keep me up on. I'm better alone. And I would do anything. Talking about anything to give you my soul. I want you to know. Talking about anything, but give you my soul.